And we're live, everyone. So hello and welcome to episode number 12 of WP Cafe, the show where we chat with WordPress professionals about practical solutions for solo and small WordPress development teams. If this sounds like you and you don't want to miss out on a single value-packed episode of WP Cafe, then subscribe right now to the Highrise Digital YouTube channel. And we also release lots of other WordPress development videos, which we hope you'll also find useful. If you haven't already subscribed, we also have a podcast too. You'll find WP Cafe on your favourite podcast provider. And this episode will be available shortly after we've finished today. You should also definitely follow us on Twitter for updates on upcoming shows, as well as snippets from this and past shows. We are WP Cafe Show. Today's episode is sponsored by Easy Digital Downloads. Easy Digital Downloads is a WordPress plugin that allows you to sell your digital products using WordPress. From ebooks to WordPress plugins to PDF files and more, Easy Digital Downloads makes selling digital products a breeze. It's simple to use and it's free to download, so get started today. And with a suite of add-ons, Easy Digital Downloads allows you to run your very own fully functional WordPress software store. And we do this at Highrise Digital using Easy Digital Downloads along with software licensing add-on and recurring billing to sell annual subscriptions to our WordPress plugins and Job Relay service. And I'm sure we'll get into this in the topic today as well. It also integrates with your favorite software such as MailChimp, Zapier, Slack, Stripe, and PayPal, just to mention a few. So if you're selling digital products online and you want to use WordPress, then Easy Digital Downloads is an absolute must. You can find out more at easydigitaldownloads.com.
So on to today's show. In this episode, we're talking about making money with WordPress plugins. I think a lot of us think of selling plugins and products as some kind of holy grail in the WordPress space. Something like stick a plugin on the repo when it gets really popular, release the premium version, watch the cash roll in, and then retire to somewhere hot like Costa Rica. That is the dream anyway. But what does selling WordPress plugins look like in reality? How do you come up with plugin ideas? Do you use the WordPress repo or go straight to a paid product? How do you market your plugin? What tech do you need to sell them and manage subscriptions? How much money can you really make selling plugins? What are the general trends in the industry and how we can find the next big thing? Today, we'll be discussing all of this and more with our two guests, Ian Poulsen and James Kemp. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So let's learn a little bit more about you both. I'll start with you, Ian. Can you tell us who you are, your story with WordPress, how you ended up being involved in selling WordPress plugins, and just a little icebreaker question, your hot beverage of choice?
Nice. Right, yeah, no, thanks for having me. Yeah, as you said, I'm Ian Poulsen. I'm a product manager at Delicious Brains, which are a WordPress plugin product company. We're the makers of WP Migrate DB Pro and Spin Up WP. I also sell my own WordPress plugins, an Instagram plugin called Integrate, and a membership and community plugin called WP User Manager. I first started using WordPress in 2008, 2009, but it kind of really got serious in 2011. I set up a blog for my for myself and my girlfriend, now wife, to share photos with family, sort of an alternative to being on Facebook, basically. But she really got into Instagram and loved using it, but there wasn't really like an easy way to share her photos from Instagram to our WordPress blog. And she basically just said, can you not do something about this? Can you not just set up something to do this for me? And so I just started to build a plugin that did that job, you know, created a WordPress post every time you post to Instagram. And yeah, I released a premium version in 2012. It made around 12K in 6 months. And I thought, holy, wow, this is good. This is, you know, there's something here. And I've kind of not left the WordPress space since. I eventually moved from my IT contract job to freelancing with WordPress, and now obviously working for a WordPress product company. And I acquired WP User Manager in 2019. And that's kind of been my main side focus since then. And I've sort of been growing that revenue since then. So yeah, I'm loving WordPress plugins, basically.
That's awesome. What about your hot beverage
choice? Currently nothing. I'm on water at the moment, but it was coffee earlier. Yeah,
coffee, black coffee. What kind of coffee? Are you a coffee snob or just instant? Or
I am not a coffee snob, but it's as easy as possible. It's two Nespresso pods. and that's it, just straight.
That's far more complicated than my coffee.
Oh, really?
Yeah, mine comes straight out of a jar into a cup with the sugar in, a bit of milk, and then water. Job done.
Oh, yeah, but I just push buttons. That's easy. It's two shots.
Yeah. Nice. All right, cheers, Ian. And James, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and your background with WordPress and with WordPress plugins and your favorite hot drink?
I can. It's pretty similar to Ian, actually. But yeah, I'm James Kemp, currently the founder of Iconic WP, where we make WooCommerce plugins. We've got like 14 premium plugins on our website, iconicwp.com. Started out again 2009, similar to Ian, which was kind of, I think, when WordPress was making a bit of a name for itself. In 2011, again, I made a plugin, a premium plugin called Multiple Images Per Variation for WooCommerce. It was a pretty hefty name for a plugin, but it described exactly what it needed to do. And that came about because I was working for a company and one of our clients needed to be able to assign multiple images to a product variation, which still isn't possible in WooCommerce. And actually, we still have that plugin today. It's called WooThumbs now. And that is one of the many features that plugin offers. Left that company, went freelance, started an agency, still, you know, working pretty deeply with WordPress and WooCommerce. Joined Delicious Brains for a little while with Ian, working on their website, and then kind of jumped off of that in about 2017, I think, and just focused fully on Iconic. I kind of rebranded, because prior to that I was selling on Code Canyon, mm-hmm. as, you know, just like a starting point, really. I think it was pretty popular back in 2012, that kind of time. So yeah, I moved away from there, and now I'm here. And my favorite hot beverage, I don't really drink hot beverages, but if I was to, I'd probably get a hot chocolate or something.
Good.
We've got one of those velvetizers from Hotel Chocolat.
A velvetizer? What is that?
You try it. You basically pour in solid chocolate flakes, and it just mixes it and heats it up with milk.
Oh my goodness.
That's amazing.
So yeah.
Thanks for that.
Put that in the show notes.
Just before we get into the show, just to mention, I know there are some of you watching along on YouTube Live, so thank you very much for that. And if you have any questions for James and for Ian, then please, if you want to pop them in the chat, it's top right of my screen. I guess it depends on what device you're looking at it on, but you'll find it somewhere. And we'll try and ask them those during the course of the show. And if you're enjoying what you're seeing, then please hit the like button. It helps us out a lot. Keith.
Cool. I'm struggling to know exactly where to start with this. My initial first question was going to be about how to find a new opportunity. But actually, I feel like we need to set the scene a little bit. And I guess I want to create a picture of what a plugin business might look like, and maybe the different types of plugin businesses there are, and, you know, the industry as a whole. Ian, first, how much of your current personal revenue comes from WordPress plugins that you own and run?
It's been changing over the last year or so, but it's over half now, which is good. Yep. And it's growing. But yeah, I'm obviously a solo developer, mm-hmm. On my plugins. This year, and a little into the back end of last year, I've been trying to find freelancers to help me do development, because you've kind of got infinite hours in the day, and I'm still working the majority of the week for Delicious Brains.
Okay.
So yeah, you're right in terms of the different types of plugin size companies, because you've got solo devs who are bootstrapping it themselves, and that's their only thing they do, mm-hmm. and you've got people who, I guess, similar to me, that have things, but they are outsourcing to help and to grow, and then you've got dedicated companies that are various sizes and really people who are making, you know, big money from WordPress plugins and plugin shops that are dedicated to creating one or multiple plugins that are really successful, you know, like the Gravity Forms, the Ninja Forms, the Awesome Motive guys that have multiple plugins that are doing sort of big business. Mm-hmm. So it's there's a real spectrum.
Yeah. Okay. And James, are you 100%, you know, WordPress plugins, is that what your business is and does now? Like,
yeah,
it's entirely. Yep.
Yeah, we're 100%. Yeah, plugins. We don't do any, you know, custom development or anything. We're just focused on the products.
Yeah. How big is your team?
So there's 3 developers, including myself, 2 support people, someone that does marketing, and
quite big.
That's it.
Yeah. Cool. So I guess the picture we're painting is that it can be big business. You know, there's very, very large companies now, and you know, it's not just something that people do on the side anymore and earn a few quid here and there. It's there's a lot of money in this industry, and I think we'll get into the trends and stuff, industry trends, a little bit more further on in the show. Okay, so then back to the start. If I was a WordPress developer looking to get into the product plugin space, how do you go about that? How do you come up with that next idea? I mean, I think this is like the real gold, really, isn't it? This is the thing everyone really wants to know, is like, how do you find something that is going to be a viable business going forward? Like, what kind of steps might you take if you were starting from scratch? James, have you got any tips on that?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of heard from our intros that we both started out in a similar way, that we were solving someone's need. You know, we were both developers, and we both had a client, I guess, for in my case, it was a client who had some kind of issue that needed resolving. And that is probably how maybe 30% of our products, if not more, came about.
Yeah.
You know, from a client, they needed this solution. There was no real good solution. At least that's, I think, how you could start back then. I feel like there's different ways to go about it today.
Okay.
You've obviously got, you know, Ian's got a nice newsletter, WP Trends. Justin Ferriman has a good newsletter as well, actually, which he sent out a post yesterday, I think it was, that kind of detailed good ways to catch trends and, you know, come up with product ideas. But for WooCommerce specifically, they've also got an ideas board, which is a nice place to kind of go and scour for problems that people are having. If you don't necessarily have your own clients,
you can
find, you know, hundreds of problems that people are having and see how popular that problem is.
Yeah. So originally, that's James, nice you were doing client work, solving client problems, and then packaging up the solutions to those problems as plugins that you could resell effectively.
Yeah, we were building websites. And part of that build would be, you know, the website needs to do this. So for with my WooThumbs example, they needed to add multiple images to a variation. With Delivery Slots, which is one of our more popular plugins, that we built that for an Indian down in Brighton, Indian restaurant. They basically wanted to be able to offer their customers the ability to choose a time to receive their takeaway or a time to come and pick up their takeaway. And over the years, that's obviously evolved based on when you get more customers in and they're dropping in, you know, feature requests and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. So now that you've transitioned like to purely plugins, I'm assuming you're not doing any kind of direct client work anymore, is that correct?
That's right.
how are you coming up with the ideas today? If you're not kind of solving those client problems and that's kind of generating the ideas for you, I mean, how would you go about that today? Or have you had to do
that? We've built new plugins based on, you know, trends that we see just by being active in the community. Mm. You know, we're on the Facebook groups that you get for WooCommerce. And you get an idea by being on them of what people are looking for, you know, what issues they're facing without them being your direct client. And you can kind of formulate patterns based on that. But the other route we've taken is to acquire products that, you know, already exist and aren't necessarily performing as well as they could be. So Flux is an example of that, which is our checkout plugin.
We
acquired that early last year, so just before the pandemic, and yeah, we got a good deal for that, and we kind of implemented it into our own structure of plugins, and have, you know, done pretty well with that method of coming up with ideas, I guess
you'd call it. That's really cool. How did you find Flux? Was that something you were actively looking for at the time, or did you kind of happen across it and then the opportunity sparked, or it was a bit more deliberate?
It was, I'm in a Facebook group as well called Selling WordPress Products. I think Vova at Freemius maybe set it up, or he's involved in some way. And they had posted on there that they were looking to sell. The group's actually meant to be for people who sell WordPress plugins as a business, but I think people have misunderstood the name, and they often post, you know, products that they're selling.
Yeah.
So I saw it on there basically and just reached out to the guy. He actually worked at a company that used a lot of our plugins anyway, so
yeah,
he was familiar.
That's great. Ian, have you got anything to add to James's examples there of ways you might kind of come up with ideas and for a new plugin?
Yeah, I think I was going to say, obviously, similar to James, that I started building plugins scratching my own itch and having a problem to solve. And I think, like James mentioned, that was good back then when you know, the market wasn't so busy with plugins and so saturated. And probably nowadays you think, I've got this problem, how can I solve it? And there's already a plugin for it. So you kind of think, oh, well, you know, if I was to build it, what's the point? But actually, I think you can look at it the other way and think, well, you know, there is a really big ecosystem of plugins, and there are lots of plugins doing the same job. If you think of forms plugins, for example, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the market is blocked off to you. Why not, you know, take an existing plugin that maybe is doing a lot of things and try and create a simplified version of it. You know, the fact that multiple plugins exist in a space doesn't mean that you can't enter it, and you know, there's an opportunity there to make a bit of money, get some users on it. I guess that's just validation that there are a lot of users, and that when you think about the WordPress WordPress world and how much of the web is powered by WordPress, that's a huge number of people that are searching for plugins, that, you know, there's the pie is massive, that everybody could get a slice of, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. James, you wanted to jump in there?
Yeah, just kind of centered around if you were to come up with an idea and then discover that you know, someone's already built it, or there's a popular plugin that does the same thing. You can analyze their reviews to get an idea of what is working for their product and what, you know, you could do differently based on negative feedback for their product.
Yeah.
That's a good way to, you know, if you really want to go down that route, you can kind of get a bigger picture of what the issues are with the existing solutions.
Yeah, so potentially a way to do it, yeah, is to take, even like to look at the WordPress repo. Obviously those are free plugins, but look through those and I guess set some kind of threshold for popularity, and then maybe try to find ones that don't have the highest reviews, and and see if you can solve that problem, or even potentially take over that plugin and develop it to a higher level. I guess there's an opportunity there. Mark?
Just coming back on that, you mentioned, like, you said it then, Keith, like a threshold for whether that's worth moving forward with. And I've often thought this, thinking about audience, you know, if there's 20,000 active installs of this plugin, and then, you know, if we could hit like 1% of those, that'd be this many people. Do you have something similar in your minds when you're taking over or thinking about taking over a plugin or developing an idea? Is there like a number that you think, well, I've got to have at least a market of X amount of people, or does that not necessarily come into it, Ian? What do you think?
I think you would want to have as high a number as possible, but I think it's really hard to understand that, say, you adopted a free plugin somehow or acquired it, adopted it, that had 20,000 active installs. It's very hard to understand, A, how many of those 20,000 are really active, and it's going to depend on the plugin. Like, are they touching that plugin every day? Is it something that they might do every 3 months because it's that kind of a scheduled backup? You know, how active the users are of the plugin. And also, yeah, then understanding, if you add some sort of monetization to that plugin, what the percentage will be, you know, your next update to the plugin that adds a banner or some form of opt-in or some form of advertisement to your premium offering, how much of those 20,000 are really going to update in the next few weeks to that plugin to see that available, and then go to your site and then convert, or, you know, then go to the checkout and then convert. I do think people overestimate how much the active installs total can affect you know, generating revenue. And I think there's a bit of a trend at the moment where people are quite happy to sell their free plugins, which they haven't monetized, but they are sort of selling it on the back of a large install base, and they're overpricing it because they think, you know, one active install person equates to like a dollar or something, and it's not quite possible to, you know, for somebody to acquire it and then convert to that level. But it is a good way of doing it. You've got a channel that you can market to straight out of the gate, kind of thing, if you take over a plugin like that.
Cool. Thank you.
In terms of, like, just staying on the topic of evaluating an opportunity, are there anything else that you would look at? Any ways that you can do some market research? Like, what kind of resources or tools and things would you be looking at in terms of evaluating a potential product, James?
There's a few things. I mean, if I was going to start fresh building a product, I'd want to make sure that the product either adds value in some way or generates value for the customer, because they're the ones that people are mostly going to buy, or, you know, be willing to part with their cash to get hold of. And for me, that means sticking in the e-commerce world, but there's, you know, space to do that outside of it, like Ian's user manager plugin. That's something that people need, that functionality, and they need it on an ongoing basis. So with the e-commerce space, something that I haven't really tapped into yet, but you could tap into, is kind of analyzing the Shopify marketplace, see what apps are performing well over there that don't necessarily have competitors in the WordPress space. It's strange because the Shopify marketplace, they are able to charge monthly what people in the WordPress space would have to charge yearly. They have this perceived value of being, you know, a lot more, they can value their products a lot higher than you can in the WordPress space. Also,
why do you think that is?
I think it's because WordPress is free and people, you know, come to it and they think, oh, it's free, I don't want to spend any money. And then they realize they do have to start spending money, and they want to keep that limited. Whereas when you're joining Shopify, you know that you're kind of have this initial outlay of cost anyway. That's why I think.
Do you think that's changing at all in the WordPress industry?
It's definitely changing, because when I started on Code Canyon, they set the prices for my products. WooThumbs, for example, went on at like $8 lifetime.
Wow.
Whereas now it's $79 a year,
which
is much more sustainable. And I remember back in the Code Canyon days, there was a theme that kind of broke the mold a bit, and they set their price from something like $16 to $199 or something like that. I can't remember what theme it was. But everyone was pretty shocked by it, and I feel like that was kind of the start, because people still bought it, you know, at that price. And I think as people moved away from that marketplace, they kind of realized that they could charge more. And also people kind of adopted the subscription model, which means that if you want to maintain having a plugin business, you need that subscription model. Like you can't maintain a business with support, with developers, based on a $8 lifetime sale. So it's definitely shifting that way.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Ian, do you want to jump in there, Ian?
Yeah, I was going to say, James, interesting you're talking about Code Canyon, because I recently realized, and I hadn't looked at it for a while, that you can now, as a merchant, set your own prices. And I wondered if you knew when they changed that. And I'm assuming that was in response to the fact that everything has been undercharged severely, or underpriced, should I say, and that they're trying to keep people on that platform.
It was when I was leaving, probably within a year of when I left, which was 2017. So maybe 2016, 2017, they allowed you to set your own prices.
Mm.
And it was around that time that the theme that I was just talking about, they just, you know, went straight out and boosted their price. Mm-hmm. I think when I left Code Canyon, mine were probably at about 49. Like, I think that was the highest, and that was still, you know, one-off purchase.
Yeah,
and you still had to pay a commission fee to Code Canyon, quite significant.
Yeah, 30%
or something.
It's like definitely. I mean, so we're just like dipping our toe really at the minute as a business in the product space. We've got something that's kind of like moderately successful at the moment, but whenever we do some research and we start like looking around, and you go onto Code Canyon and you look at the prices and the number of installs, and I often just think, how on earth are these people making any money? There's some massive successes, obviously, and you crunch the numbers and there's like millions of dollars involved, but like, you know, more often than not, there aren't. How does a business make any money selling something like a theme or a plugin for, you know, 30 quid? Like, how does that work? What are the economics of that, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, it's not great economics, but I think the biggest thing for Code Canyon sellers is just the distribution, and they've got a huge marketplace that they can tap into, and they have, eyes on their plugin that they wouldn't have normally. Mm. But I think if you're trying to grow it and become bigger, then yeah, being on that marketplace is restrictive. But you still need to have the way to get eyes on your plugin, and you need marketing, and I think that's always something I always come back to, is the benefit of having a free version on WordPress.org,
right?
Because that is the place that people search for plugins, you know, inherently inside their WordPress site. So having some form of freemium plugin that has a pro version, or, you know, a premium aspect to it on WordPress.org is massive, because it's a huge marketing channel that I think people can still take advantage of.
I think that's a great segue then onto the question on marketing. So Prashant asks, how are you marketing your plugins? So obviously, let's go to James. You're probably slightly different than, I don't if you've got anything on .org, but how are you sort of tackling that aspect?
Yeah, all of ours are premium only. So we don't get the benefits of a freemium model. I agree with Ian that, you know, being on the WordPress repo is definitely beneficial because you get eyes on it. But the way we've done it is, obviously we started out on Code Canyon, so we had that kind of marketplace structure, and we started at a point where there wasn't many people on there. I think we were in like the top 100 sellers at the time, so that was a big benefit. And whilst doing that, we also had our website running behind the scenes. These days, what we find works is content marketing. So we put out quite a bit of content centered around how to do X in WooCommerce using our plugin as the solution. And that kind of content performs the best out of most of the things we tried. And you can create that content for your own site. You can create it as guest posts for other sites, which is what we do. Or you can advise your affiliates to create content in that manner. But these kind of like how-to style posts work really well. And then we can link that into our email marketing. We use ConvertKit, and we'll send out an email every time there's a new post and just kind of lead people through to the, you know, the blog post. Subsequently, they see how to solve an issue, and then they go on to take a trial of the product. And we've got these embedded call to actions within these posts where, because we use Freemius, you can basically initiate a trial of the product within the post. It just opens the checkout in a modal. So that works pretty well. But yeah, as like a kind of bird's eye view, affiliates, content marketing, we do Facebook retargeting. So anyone that's shown like serious intent of wanting to purchase the plugin, so they've maybe opened the checkout in our case, because every product has its own checkout, or they've viewed the pricing section. So we're like very specifically targeting this tiny niche of people that have visited the page, and retargeting back at them with adverts that say something along the lines of either a customer testimonial, and literally just, you know, their testimonial, and an image with a snippet out of their testimonial. Or the other one we do is to kind of convince them to take a trial, you know, let them know that we do have trials available, and they convert really well.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Ian,
that's right.
You want to come in?
Yeah, I was going to just say, because obviously James is quite a mature company in terms of, you know, the length of time, the plugins, revenue, the team size and everything, which is great because you've been allowed to, or you've been able to try different marketing channels and work out which ones do well, focus on others. But I think when it comes to sort of starting from scratch, I think it's important to like choose one channel and try and focus on that. Like if you're building a premium only plugin and you're just ignoring WordPress.org, then just double down on content marketing. Just get your site and your blog getting traffic from Google that is traffic that has the correct search intent for your product, that's going to fit your product. And if you are doing a free version, concentrate on the free version on .org and try and support those users amazingly. Try and get all the bugs ironed out. You know, you've got almost free testers of your plugin, people who are going to give you examples for feature requests that you can then put into the pro version, and try and sort of foster that side of it more. So just try not to be, because I do this and I do it all the time, but try not to be affected by the scattergun of like shiny things that you could do. Facebook ads, you could do Google ads, you could do pay-per-click, you could do content marketing, you could do affiliates. Like, don't try and do too much. Just try and focus.
And also realize when it's not working, and you know, move on to one of the other channels. Yeah, definitely narrow your focus on I would say one or two. I think with content marketing, it's a long game. You know, you're not going to get results straight away, but you could complement that with Google Ads if you've got the budget to get those posts, you know, straight up into Google.
Yeah.
And allow them to rank over time. Saying that, we never had any luck with Google Ads.
Interesting. So I just want to, before we move on, dig in just a little bit further into this, the WordPress repo versus like other repositories like ThemeForest or whatever. James, you say you don't have a free version of your plugins on the WordPress repo. Why not? And are you ever thinking about doing that in the future? Would you experiment with that?
I've done it in the past. Okay. So we had a feature requests board plugin that we sold fairly recently. That had a free version and a pro version.
Yep.
Why didn't I do it for Iconic? I don't know. It's hard to do, I think. It's hard to determine what's a free feature without giving away too much that people don't Yep. need to upgrade. And, you know, what's a premium feature and what deciding what people would actually want to pay for. It's a hard decision to make. And I think the plugins that we do kind of tackle one thing, which is hard to kind of segregate into free/premium without, you know, for example, like a quick view plugin, which yeah. is one of our products. I mean, a lot of themes have them now anyway. So what do you count as being worthwhile as you know, being included in the free plugin?
Yeah. Sure. Kind of do one thing and do it well plugin. So how do you yeah. bring that into something that's paid for and not, I guess, isn't it?
It is tricky, yeah. But it's not off the table completely. It's just not something we've necessarily explored.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. I think it's difficult, James, for you as well, because like you're building on top of WordPress, but also on top of WooCommerce.
Yeah.
So you are nested by the nature of it, adding just a feature for each plugin kind of thing to WooCommerce.
But then,
so
saying
it's
that,
quite
got,
hard to
you've
do
You've got
it.
Yith. Who do the same thing as us, and I think all of their plugins are freemium.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
They've got free and pro versions, so I'm not sure how.
Mm.
There must be some kind of structure to determining what works in free, because you need to give them enough that they want to use it, but not too much yeah. that they don't want to upgrade. So.
Yeah. I never know which is the best way to do it, because if you've got a premium plugin that you built and you know it's successful, is it easy to kind of retrofit and create a free version from it, or does that kind of not ever work because you know that you're going to be just taking away features, or is it just best to start from scratch with a plugin that's free, put it on .org, build it and keep adding features until you think, right, I'm at a point now where this should be a premium feature, and then you can put it into the premium version, and then at that point it's growing. But it is a difficult decision. I do think that maybe historical or plugins in the past that have done well in the freemium model, like that have got the free versions and then got add-ons, it's been easier for them in the past maybe, but it, yeah. it does depend on what the kind of plugin it is, because you know, like Ninja Forms, for example, it was always a free version on .org and they added pro features as add-ons, and that kind of model works because they've created their own core version and they can add new functionality as just premium add-ons. Yeah. But that's suited to that type of plugin.
It's like WooCommerce as well, isn't it? Their whole yeah. model is, you know, WooCommerce yeah. is free, but they make their money from the add-ons.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But then the flip side to that is Ninja Forms, you know, the biggest competitor to them is Gravity Forms, which has never been a free version. It's always been premium. You know, it's the original WordPress premium plugin. And I think they, when you speak to people and hear Carl Hancock talk on Twitter, like they completely spurn the WordPress repo. They don't think it has any value. They don't like the way it's run and the way the search algorithm works, and they don't like the rating system or how you know, somebody could leave you a one-star review because they don't, you don't give them support, which is, you know, wholly unreasonable, because of course you can't support every person with a free plugin when it's a lot of people, you know, it's their free time. But then to give you a one-star rating actually affects your sort of rank in the search results, so therefore it affects your plugin and potentially your premium version. So they don't, people don't like the WordPress repo for that reason. And of course Gravity Forms has become successful just without it. So there are people who think you can just do a premium version and only, and probably right now start a new one and you'll become successful, but I do worry that that isn't necessarily the case, because you know they've been there and done it, and like, is there a bit of survivor bias on that, because they are where they are, and how many people have tried premium plugins only and not gone anywhere, kind of thing.
Yeah,
I guess it's hard to tell, isn't it? You know, like, so they were, part of it is the right time at the right place back then, they were the first to there, and but there's nothing to say that that wouldn't work now for the right product, I assume, is there? So it's interesting.
Yeah, and WP Rocket did it in 2014, which is you know, not as old as Gravity Forms, and they still have become wildly successful. So it depends, as always.
Ian, do you have any specific tips for success in the repo, in the WordPress repo? I know it could be a potential place to pitch a product of yours.
So as you mentioned, pluginrank.com is my sort of SaaS product, another side product that helps people understand how their plugin is ranking in search results in WordPress.org. Because, you know, if you've got users inside their own WordPress dashboard that want to search for a membership plugin, they will type it in, membership plugin. They won't know which one they want. And obviously WordPress surfaces results and probably gives you the first 20 or 40. And how many users are going to be selecting anything bar, you know, below the first 10? So trying to increase your position is helpful if you have a premium offering and you want to obviously make money and create the best, or make the most of that channel of marketing with being on WordPress.com or .org even. It's the best thing is support, keeping on top of support, because even though you might think, oh, I've put this out for free, it's a free plugin, I can't support users as well. But, you know, in black and white, it is a ranking algorithm factor. So if you don't reply to support, that will affect you. Whereas if you kind of keep on top of support, resolve support, you will get a boost in the rankings, higher ratings. So it's coupled with support. If you go out your way and help somebody and give them good support, fix their problem, whatever, they will probably more than likely, and you could ask them for a rating, and that, you know, helps your exposure on the repo, and all of that then is going to help hopefully tie into more people using your plugin, which then will also help as well. So I think you can't just create it, deploy it, release it on WordPress.org and forget about it. You've got to look after it, and you've got to you know, respond to people and try and grow it by, you know, taking care of it.
Okay, that's good, thank you.
We've had a few questions come in, a lot of them actually about finances and money, so I think we're going to come on to that in a second, but we probably should move on to the tech side of things, Keith, next, I think.
I just had one more thing, Mark. I know
Sorry.
Get on the tech side, but just pricing, I thought was be good to touch on, in terms of, so we've kind of talked a little bit about a kind of pricing model, or in terms of like freemium, but how do you come up with an actual price for your product? James, I'll go to you for that.
Yeah, it is tricky. I mean, the starting point is obviously going to be to evaluate similar products in the marketplace. Also, it touches on what I said before about whether your product adds value or, you know, generates value for the customer. You can charge a higher price point for that kind of product. Or if your product is the kind of essential component to what they're building, you know, people will pay more for that kind of product. But it is tough. I think it's never a set in stone thing. I think you can you don't need to set your price and stick to it forever. You can kind of adjust it as time goes on. What I tend to do is anyone that's bought it already and has an active subscription will maintain whichever price they've paid for it. I don't tend to increase their prices because I know as a person I don't like it when companies do that to me. But that doesn't mean you can't experiment. And you can do A/B tests as well, so you can have the same page serve up two different prices and see which one performs better. And there's always going to be, you know, some kind of sweet point in terms of a price. And then you've also got the kind of psychological side to it of using nines and fours. You know, 49 is more appealing than 50. So yeah, that would be my advice.
Good stuff. Ian?
Yeah, very similar to James. I think the psychology side of it, if you value your product low, I think people see that as not a valuable product. Like, it's that psychology aspect that if it's a higher price thing, people think, oh, you know, this is something that I need, this is something that's going to be worth that money. And yeah, again, just to reiterate, it's like James said, it's not set in stone, change it. Like, for example, when I acquired WP User Manager, which, just some context, is a free plugin with add-ons, you know, it's the NinjaForms model, it's the EDD model. The plugins, the add-ons were being sold. Some were $19 for a single site license, and some were $39, and that was the highest price. So, like, an average order from a customer would be $39,
yeah,
which is kind of feels low. And ever since then, I've just been periodically raising prices. And that has come alongside adding more add-ons and adding bundles of add-ons. But experimenting with the fact that somebody could go and buy a bundle for now $299, which gives them all of the add-ons. They might not need all of the add-ons, but it might be cost-effective. And raising the prices of the individual add-ons, like, that's completely changed how, what sort of my revenue looks like in terms of average order value, you know, monthly revenue, and it's completely different. And actually, the add-ons themselves haven't changed the whole deal. I've added more add-ons, maybe improved a little bit, but they're the same things. So it's, yeah, do not be afraid to kind of change it and tweak it and experiment.
Mark?
Here we have a question from Tom Hurst, kind of linked to the money side of things and prices. Tom's been on the show, actually, and he says, "Hi all, have you ever picked up a correlation between the price paid for a plugin and the customer's expected level of support for it?" Which kind of links a bit what you were saying then, Ian, in that if it's not high enough, it feels like they don't value it. So I just wondered if you could answer that, Ian.
Yeah, and I've seen it from customers, and I've also seen it from myself, which is a weird way to describe it, but I'll explain. Like, if someone comes in, especially when I first introduced like the higher or a bundle plan that was like a higher price, so $200 or $300 as it is now, when people buy that, if they have support issues, I feel like I need to support them probably above and beyond, because it's a big chunk of money that's just come my way. And so therefore I think I need to look after this customer. And similarly, when I added a lifetime plan, so people were paying like 2.5 times the annual license point, so it was like $599. Those people kind of expect quite a lot, I think. I've had instances where people, you know, they'll come with support questions. It might be like a bug or something they weren't quite understanding, and you fix it, and then they come back with, "Oh, now I've got you. Can I ask this, this, and this?" And it might be actually really generic WordPress questions, and you're like, "Hang on, I could Google this for you, or you could Google it, or, but yeah, it's not actually to do with the plugin," but you still feel a bit indebted to help them out.
Yeah.
So yeah, it does happen, but then you also do get customers that never ask you for support, similar licenses. So it swings and roundabouts, but I think it's tied into WordPress people who think they are entitled to lots because the majority of WordPress is free. The majority of the plugins are free. So when they pay some money, they think they should get everything, kind of thing.
Yeah. James?
Yeah, I think another thing to consider is the higher price your plugin is, the less customers you're going to get. So you could get, for the same amount of money, less support load with a higher price plugin. And it is kind of true that people that pay more for a product often want less support than people that pay less or get it for free. And they're usually more understanding with the kind of boundaries of your support. You know, we don't do any custom development. We'll advise them to go to Codable if they want extensive custom development. We do we'll provide snippets and you know, kind of PHP, you know, like a quick hook or something. But yeah, they're kind of more understanding the more they've paid. Like we have bundles as well. We've our all access bundles, $4.99 a year. And like Ian said, we do feel like we need to kind of tend to them with priority, because they're obviously a high value customer. But I mean, they don't tend to ask as many questions as even, you know, pre-sales.
Yeah, I think in our limited experience, we've seen similar to you two. So yeah,
absolutely.
Should we move on to the tech, Keith?
Go for it.
So we just wondered. Obviously, we've mentioned Easy Digital Downloads, our sponsor for this show. They offer an excellent service for selling digital products. We just wondered what you guys use to manage your subscriptions and possibly licenses and plugins and that sort of stuff. So maybe you could let us know how you handle that, Ian.
Yeah, I use EDD, Easy Digital Downloads, on the WP User Manager site, and I use it similar to you with the licenses and the recurring add-on. And that's good. Like it's kind of the original way to sell downloads in WordPress. It feels like it's the way to do it. It doesn't come without its challenges, I think, especially as a UK seller with VAT in the mix. You know, it handles US tax as well and all of that stuff. But I'm using a plugin from Barn2 that is the EU VAT plugin to make that a bit easier. But yeah, to be honest, because when you're talking about Easy Digital Downloads, you're talking about having your own e-commerce system or, you know, on your site. So along with your plugin that you're managing and selling, you've got to sort of maintain your e-commerce platform. You've got to make sure all the updates are on, working, and handle the taxes and make sure that's all working correctly. So that it's easy, but it's not easy at the same time to manage your own e-commerce stuff. But yeah, it works well.
Yeah, it's certainly like straightforward isn't the word, I think, but you know, plugins like Easy Digital Downloads and others out there, I'm sure, make it a lot easier than it could be, for sure, definitely. James, what do you use for yours?
I use Freemius. So Freemius is, they are the merchant of records. So they handle the licensing, the checkout flow, basically, you know, everything, the abandoned cart, user database and everything like that. So they will process the payments for me. They'll handle all the VAT stuff, so I don't have to worry about it. They do subscriptions, and then on a monthly basis they'll pay me whatever I've earned the previous month and a half before, which works really nice. And that's what I was looking for when I was moving away from Code Canyon. Code Canyon were obviously, they handled things in the same way. They pay you monthly as a vendor, so you don't have to worry about VAT. And I was looking for someone to handle that for me, because I didn't want to worry about the setup of my e-commerce side of things. There's pros and cons to it. You know, Freemius obviously take a percentage of the sales. And you're also kind of limited in terms of your branding. for actual emails that get sent out, transactional emails and account areas and things like that. But they are improving that side of things.
And is that mean that the checkout process happens off your site on the servers, or is that still on your site?
It's a bit of both. It's like an embedded checkout. So when someone clicks to buy or take a trial on one of our products, you get this modal that pops up, which is essentially an iframe to a secure checkout on Freemius's site. And you get the ability to kind of stylize that with your own CSS. So it's heavily branded towards what my site looks like anyway.
Yeah. Good. Anything else to add on that, Keith?
No, not particularly. You handle most of the tech stack for us, right, Mark? I don't know if you like. Do you have any insights from what we've done? Because I don't get involved too much, but
no, not massively. Similar to Ian, really. Obviously, we use Easy Digital Downloads, and which has worked really well for us. We have the all access pass, like Ian mentioned. They do bundles of products, and we use quite a lot of them, so it makes sense to buy all the sort of the bundle together, and that works well. It's all good on that aspect.
Super interesting to hear James talk about a kind of not having to worry about tax all the VAT stuff, because that can be a real pain.
That was
basically my only requirement when I was looking for a solution, was that it has to handle the tax for me. But there comes a point which, you know, we hit a while ago, where it's potentially more cost effective to just hire someone to manage your e-commerce site for you, and you know, handle the VAT and things like that, because you're paying the same in commission anyway. So
I mean, the VAT side of stuff isn't, sorry Mark, isn't very easy at the moment. I mean, to manage it yourself is still a hassle. Like, you've got UK VAT and then VAT MOS that was, and now with Brexit, I'm now registered in Ireland to do my VAT MOS returns, and I'm now navigating a whole different process and system to do that. And it's just like, I don't know why I waste a day every month or every 3 months doing it, but
it seems
you are where you are and you just continue, don't you?
Very complicated. Yeah, Andreas just mentioned there that the EU VAT system is bonkers and the UK VAT system is too difficult, etc. I think we can all probably agree that it's quite complicated, for sure. I just wanted, before we move on to the next bit, I just wanted to get one question which I thought was interesting from Prashant, and he mentions, how do you protect your plugins from piracy? Which I thought was an interesting question. James, what do you think? Maybe that you don't, maybe that you do. Is there anything that you do around that?
The simple answer is you don't really. I've got thoughts on this. So Freemius, they protect it more so than you would see in other products, I think. They have the ability to disable the plugin if you don't have a valid license.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't really protect it from piracy, because you could quite easily just modify the code and strip that out, which is what people do. You know, our products are on tons of GPL sites. I think, to be honest, you kind of just have to ignore the GPL stuff. As long as someone's not actively saying that they are you and they're trying to sell the product as if they were you, which would obviously be an issue. But the value that the customer's getting is the support that you offer, the fact that you're the one developing the product and you're going to be adding, you know, the features that they need, and also that they're definitely not going to get any malware, which is quite often the case on these GPL sites. And if you just explain to the customer about that, they tend to say, oh, okay, yeah, I'll buy it from you. A lot of customers, if they're not technical, don't even realize that a GPL site is a ripoff of your product. So when they do come to you for support and you say, you know, you bought it from a GPL site, we can't support you, they don't realize that they've done that.
Yeah.
So it's a lot about education. And one thing that we did last year, or potentially the year before, was to create landing pages for example, like WooThumbs Nulled, to kind of target those keywords so that when people are searching for it, they'll come to that landing page and we'll basically explain why it's a bad idea. I don't necessarily know that it converts particularly well, but it felt a good opportunity to do that.
Just to confirm, GPL sites are websites that are offering these plugins because they are released under the general public license, so essentially anyone can do anything they want with them. Just to make sure if anyone that's watching doesn't know, listening doesn't know that. Have you anything to add?
Yes, they'll buy the plugins from the vendor at full price. Yep. Usually, it's a good case for not offering unlimited licenses as well, because that's something that they could do, is buy that and sell the licenses to save themselves the effort of modifying the code. But yeah, they'll buy it from the vendors and then they'll resell it at like $5, or right. A lot of them have subscription where you pay, you know, $20 a month and you get access to all of WooCommerce's suite of plugins. So yeah, that's what they do.
Ian, have you anything to add on piracy and protecting it or anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing I come across too much with my own plugins, in terms of I don't think they're popular enough to kind of get to those levels of GPL clubs, but we've seen it at Delicious Brains, and I think it's just a case of not giving them any oxygen, and there's not much you can do about it. But when you do get the customers who have picked up a Nulled version of the plugin and then think that they can get support from you, it's frustrating, but I think you can put them right and just, yeah, try not to... trying to waste that energy on it, I think, any more than a bit.
Yeah, a bit of education as well, thinking to make them aware of what they've got and what they can't then have. You
know. Yeah, normally it works.
Where are we going next, Keith?
Well, we've hit the hour mark, so I don't want to push it too much further, but there were a couple of topics that I kind of wanted to touch on. Again, one is support, which we've covered a little bit, but I want to dig in just a little bit more into that. And then the second is just trends in the marketplace. So we'll come to that at the end. So on the support topic, quite often when Mark and I are trying to think of an idea for a plugin or wonder whether something's worthwhile producing and putting out there, we think about the potential support costs, because that's obviously one of the big costs of a plugin business. And it can really put us off. You know, you think, okay, I'm going to sell this for X per month or per year, and we expect probably an hour or two per year per customer, kind of thing. What's the reality? And what, like, you guys both have, you know, fairly successful plugins. What is the support load on you? Is there a formula you can use? Does it just completely change depending on the product? How do you kind of factor that in whenever you're trying to make decisions about whether to launch something or not, James?
Yeah, like you say, it depends on the product. But there's so many variables with WordPress stuff that they could be using your product on multiple different types of servers with different plugins. There's always going to be support. I think if you're starting out with it, it's important to do the support yourself, at least for a while. Because you get to communicate with the customer, which they like. You know, they like to speak to the person who's actually building the product. But you also can analyze your conversations and realize where people are tripping up with your product and improve, you know, the processes that got them to that point to avoid it happening in future.
Yeah.
So I think there's, you know, with my products, I think I supported them for 5 or 6 years without hiring anyone. But at this point, we use a company called Level Up, levelup.support. And they're just, you know, exceptionally good. They assign you a specific agent, or, you know, one or more. So you've got the same person doing your support every time. They're based in the Philippines, so they're very cost effective for people in the UK or the US, and probably other areas of Europe. And I would say we spend under £2,000 a month, and they handle all of the first tier support for us.
Okay.
So there's definitely like a period where you should be doing it yourself, I think.
Yeah.
And then once you've got the revenue, you don't really have an issue to start paying for that support, at least to, you know, channel the more basic questions to the right places.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of like what percentage of your revenue you assign to support approximately across your products?
That's a leading question now. He's just told you 2,000 support.
Yeah.
1%.
No comment. No comment.
I couldn't say because we have the first tier support and we also have, you know, technical support, which myself and my developers do as well. But I, like probably 50% of our time is spent on support, plus 100% of the level up time on support.
Yeah.
It's a big part of our business model. I think having good support is what's going to make you last. So it's definitely something you should consider before releasing a product.
That's great. Thanks, James. Ian, anything to add on the support topic?
Yeah, I think in answer to your question that you're obviously asking each other when you're thinking, I don't think the perceived or potential burden and cost of support should ever be a blocker to releasing a product from your side. I think, you know, initially do the support and get the, you know, the bug reports that are, you know, support is legitimate that you're going to then fix it or get feature requests or, you know, I think it's a valid thing to have. And obviously, yeah, you can, it changes over time and it changes per product. But like as James said, you can optimize things, you can optimize the product, you can optimize the documentation, you can optimize because of support. So I think there's definitely a concept or a perception that it's a negative thing, but for the most part, it's something that is going to improve your product and differentiate you from competition.
It's also where you get a lot of your positive feedback from.
Yeah, testimonials.
And that in itself is rewarding and kind of makes you want to keep doing it.
Yeah. So on that, so if someone comes to you and actually what they're requesting you would regard as kind of irrelevant to the product or service that you have provided, so completely out of scope. Ian, you mentioned it before, I think. Lots of people, once you sold them a WordPress product, they want you to solve all their WordPress ills. How do you handle that? Like, do you have like a nice little one-liner and like a polite thing to say, sorry, this is, you know, not included?
Yeah, exactly. And it's canned responses, but also it's a gray area because sometimes it might be something that I think, oh, do you know what? That would be good for users, for other users of the plugin, but I've already only had one person request it. So I might note it down. I'll just say, look, I'll keep this in mind, but it's not going to happen right now.
Yeah.
But I think for me, the other thing that's helpful is like WP User Manager is heavily customizable. You know, there's lots of filters and hooks in there that it is possible to probably do what they want. And I just have to say, look, this is out of the scope of support. I'm afraid it would be custom development. And this is where you can go and get a developer or ask your developer. But yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with being upfront about it. Like, you know, this isn't something that we're going to look at. It's not on our roadmap. But it, you know, this is the way you could go and get it done. That's goodbye for now. Yeah.
That's great. James?
Yeah, I think it's important to frame your conversations with the customer as well, that you are working with them. So you're saying, so for example, if there's a third party plugin conflict, rather than saying you need to go back to your other developer and tell them this, you say something along the lines of, you know, we need to reach out to your the other developer of the plugin, and when they get back to you, we can then figure out how we can solve the issue. So you're not putting the blame back onto them, which is when they could start to become a bit confrontational.
Yeah.
So you need to frame it in a way that you're working with them to get them the best result, rather than kind of dismissing them to something else.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, guys. Last big question then. What are the significant trends in the premium plugin market? Ian, I'll go to you first on that.
I think there's two ways to answer that question, because when you talk about trends, like we've talked around ideas for plugins and the way the business, like the market's going, but also and we've also talked about it, trends in how we sell the plugins. So like James, I think, mentioned earlier, like it used to be everybody selling like one-off purchases, like you'd sell a $8 license and it'd be lifetime, whereas now it's moved to yearly subscriptions. It used to be manual renewals, and then now pretty much everybody has automatic renewals that have to be cancelled by the customer. There was a time when everybody offered renewal discounts, and I think that's less and less now. Like, there's a lot of sort of trends that have been set by bigger plugin companies like WooCommerce, I think, were the first to stop renewal discounts, and it created a major hoo-ha in the community. But actually now that's like just a given.
Yeah.
And you know, you're still having to support the plugin going forward. And I think the trend that's sort of happening at the moment is, and it's similar to what freemiums are doing in terms of locking features when a license has become expired or cancelled or refunded or whatever, because there's this history where, because the code's GPL, you're not selling the code, but you're selling access to support and you're selling access to updates to that code. But actually, to try and say, well, if you don't keep paying for the license, you won't be able to use the plugin to the full potential, that's becoming more and more prevalent, I think, and it's going to be something that more plugin companies do. I mean, I'm not personally doing that myself, but I can see it happening around me, and I'm thinking that feels like the more sort of SaaS model approach. Yeah. And the Shopify side, which James was saying. So I think that's definitely a trend that's happening. And in terms of, just quickly, in terms of business ideas and what plugins are being built, I think, you know, James is a prime example of WooCommerce. The ecosystem around WooCommerce is massive, and e-commerce is only going to get bigger. So sort of hitching your wagon to something like WooCommerce and building plugins for that, or even other big plugins, like learning plugins are big.
Yeah.
And just going in that direction and not trying to create your own, product that has to have its own market, just sort of hook onto one that exists and keep going from there.
That's great. James?
Yeah, I think just going back to the trend of kind of locking features, with freemiums that's optional in most circumstances, but there are times when you'd want to do that. So for example, we offer 14-day free trials. So if someone takes a trial, they use the plugin for 14 days and then decide not to renew. If we didn't have some kind of locking feature, then they would still just be able to use the plugin, like, regardless.
Yeah.
So the ability to lock in that scenario is quite nice. But we do, after a year, if they don't renew, they get to use the plugin. In its current state, they just don't get updates or support. That's how we handle it.
Cool.
That's great.
We've done a long time. I think we should probably wrap things up, really. Before we do, James, where can people sort of find out more about you and maybe follow you on the web?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at James C. Kemp, but also at IconicWP. Website is iconicwp.com.
Very good. Thank you. And Ian, what about yourself?
Yeah, I'm at PoleVaultWeb on Twitter and PoleVaultWeb.com. which has got a link to all my sort of stuff on there. So, yeah.
Excellent. Highly recommend you head on over there and follow these guys, particularly if you're selling WordPress plugins, obviously. I'd like to give another big thank you to our sponsor, Easy Digital Downloads. If you are looking to sell WordPress plugins and or themes, I guess, online or digital products, then really go and check them out at easydigitaldownloads.com. It's a great solution. And again, please do subscribe to the High Rise Digital channel to make sure you don't miss out on any of our content. And we look forward to bringing you the next episode, which is a big one. It is on May the 10th at 5 p.m. British Summer Time. That is 4 p.m. Universal Time, where we're going to be joined by Matt Mullenweg and Josepha Chomforsey. I beg your pardon if I said that wrong, Josepha. And we're going to talk about the future of WordPress. So if you've got any questions that you want to ask to Matt and Josepha, then please get in touch on Twitter, ask them on there, and we will be publishing that video shortly on YouTube, so you can obviously add it to your reminders. Thanks so much again to our guests Ian and James for being so generous with their time, and we thank everyone who tuned in to listen either on the podcast or on YouTube, and we will see you next time.